Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to this podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app today.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few weeks more. Head to netsuite.com/CBSNet. netsuite.com/CBSNet. Hiring is challenging, especially when you're a business owner with a lot on your plate. Thankfully, there's a place you can go for help. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does the work for you to make hiring fast and easy. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Experience faster, easier hiring with ZipRecruiter. Try it free at ziprecruiter.com/zipdaily. That's ziprecruiter.com/ZIPDAILY.
Good morning, I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning, the first official Sunday of summer. It's hard to believe, but a quarter of a century has passed since a television series called The Sopranos, about a suburban New Jersey crime boss, his overbearing mother, and his psychiatrist, first hit the airwaves. The show was an instant hit, and for the next 8 years helped revolutionize the way television is made. And as Anthony Mason will tell us, it's turned its mostly unknown actors into stars.
It changed a lot of people's lives.
I think all of ours, in all kinds of ways.
Cast members and the creator of The Sopranos.
I've never been able to figure out whether it's a comedy. I guess it's like life, I don't know, I hope.
Marked the 25th anniversary of the show's debut.
Oh, this is really good.
Yeah.
They're not going to pick it up.
I didn't realize you were so unhappy.
Ahead on Sunday Morning.
As second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, husband of Vice President Kamala Harris, is the first of his kind. But as he tells Rita Braver, he doesn't mind playing second fiddle.
Welcome to the office of the second gentleman.
Thank you. Whether it's in his office or anywhere else,
I was a business lawyer for so long, so I get it.
Doug Emhoff, the first male to be married to a vice president, wants to make one thing clear.
Are you also an advisor to your wife?
No, I'm just there to support her, to be there for her.
We're going to win this election.
Coming up on Sunday Morning, the second gentleman.
Actor Jude Law has been a star on stage and screen for nearly three decades now. And he's got the major roles and the Oscar, Golden Globe, and Tony nominations to prove it. This morning, he'll talk with our Lee Cowan.
Movies have taken Jude Law around the world. But it was here in Manhattan that a first stint on Broadway stamped his passport as a professional actor.
I'd been to New York, I'd visited, but to come and live here and work here was life-changing in every way.
Spiral ass set.
His memories, his movies.
We would have to have their head cut off.
And the madness of Henry VIII. Later on Sunday Morning.
Jude Law has some stellar company this morning. Actor June Squibb will be telling Mo Rocca about making her leading lady debut at the age of 94. A father and son who were once at odds show Martha Teichner how a mutual love of food sweetened their relationship. Seth Doan introduces us to a group of Israelis and Palestinians who were once enemies and are now working to understand each other using empathy instead of weapons, and more. It's a Sunday morning for June 23rd, 2024, and we'll be right back.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like trying to find a needle in a haystack. You get too many resumes and not enough qualified candidates. But not with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds amazing candidates for you fast. ZipRecruiter's technology starts showing you qualified people for your job immediately. Ditch the other hiring sites and let ZipRecruiter help you find the needle in the haystack. Try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/ZipDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ZipDaily.
This summer, let your imagination soar by listening on Audible. Whether you listen to stories, motivation, expert advice, any genre you love, you can be inspired to imagine new worlds, new possibilities, new ways of thinking. With Audible, there's more to imagine when you listen. And speaking of listening, you can listen to the best-selling fantasy romance, A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas, right now on the Audible app. Transport yourself to a realm of magic and curses, all from the comfort of your living room. As an Audible member, you choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
A quarter century has passed since we first met Tony Soprano, the New Jersey crime boss dealing with family dysfunction at home and at work. The groundbreaking HBO series, The Sopranos, would eventually claim a record 21 Emmy Awards. Anthony Mason takes us to a Sopranos family reunion. A quarter century has passed since we first met Tony Soprano, the New Jersey crime boss dealing with family dysfunction at home and at work. The groundbreaking HBO series, The Sopranos, would eventually claim a record 21 Emmy Awards. Anthony Mason takes us to a Sopranos family reunion.
Has it been a while since you've been back here?
Oh, yeah. It's been 17 years.
David Chase's drama about a mob family headquartered in a New Jersey strip club would change television. All year, creator and cast have been celebrating the debut of The Sopranos a quarter century ago.
I had a lot of friends who were auditioning for this thing called Sopranos. I thought it was about singers.
And he calls and says, you know, you want to be in my new TV show? And I say, yeah, no thanks.
Like a series on HBO was kind of like the bargain basement. And I'm not being facetious.
Chase had offered it to all of the broadcast networks.
And what did they say to you?
Too dark.
But it could be darkly funny, too.
You're not going to believe this. He killed 16 Czechoslovakians. Guy was an interior decorator.
This house looked like shit.
I've never been able to figure out whether it's a comedy. I guess it's like life. I don't know. I hope.
It started as a show about a mob boss with a troublesome mom.
All I know is daughters are better at taking care of their mothers than sons.
And that was my apartment up there.
Chase, who grew up in suburban New Jersey, based her on his own mother.
So why did you want to put her with a gangster?
I believe that if my mother had been a male,
yeah,
she might have been a criminal.
Hey, Ma.
Nancy Marchand just brought it to life.
I wish the Lord would take me now.
Well, in the meantime.
Tormented, Tony Soprano is driven to see a therapist, Lorraine Bracco, as Dr. Melfi.
Mr. Soprano?
Yeah.
So you based Tony's mother on your mother and you based the therapist on your therapist?
I think I was probably trying to remother myself.
Oh, interesting.
I was looking for a woman of my mother's age,
yeah,
who wouldn't behave like a maniac.
Yeah. And that's what Tony's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Chase also saw The Sopranos as a parable of America in decline.
At that time in America, there was so much consumption, greed, that it was enough to make a mob boss sick.
The late James Gandolfini played Tony as an endearing anti-hero.
He's incredible. Well, the whole thing was about his face.
Yeah.
And about his eyes, actually. There's something about his eyes that It was otherworldly.
It says with pulp.
You like it with pulp?
Not this much.
Edie Falco played Tony's wife, Carmela.
There's such a great dynamic between the two of you in the show.
Yeah, it's a matter of alchemy. We both had Italian families, had some idea of what this dynamic feels like, and just sort of fell into it with great ease.
Mm-hmm.
It was, a 10-year
marriage,
and it was as close to a real one as I had known.
Musician Steve Van Zandt played Tony's underboss, Silvio Dante.
Which I was very comfortable with, having, done that kind of a thing with Bruce Springsteen in real life,
Yeah.
Cheer me up, babe. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
There had never been anything like it on TV.
No stars, too many characters, no seductive lighting, no cute camera moves, nothing other than this very weird story of a mob boss who has a nervous breakdown because ducks flew out of his pool. That's the makings of a hit show?
More than a hit, it's become an enduring cultural phenomenon. Constantly rediscovered by new audiences who still tour its shooting locations.
But outside of the church right here is where Tony approaches Bobby Bacala.
What do you think the magic in it is?
Well, first of all, it's really good.
Michael Imperioli played Tony's hot-headed nephew.
Get a pastry box.
Christopher Moltisanti.
Move it!
Script after script, it would get more interesting and deeper. And, by the end of the first season, I was like, this is incredible.
It was like, I guess a musician playing, Bach or something. It's like, this is just an honor.
Within two shows, everybody stopped me on the street, Sopranos, Sopranos, Sopranos.
Yeah.
The fact that I had been a rock star for 20 years before that, gone. It's just like...
We would go out, five or six of us, and get a standing ovation. It was like playing for the Yankees.
Steve Sciarrippa joined the cast in the second season.
Bobby Bucciarelli, the last man standing.
We were sincerely friends, on and off.
The only tense day I can remember, honestly, was the day we whacked Vinny Pastore.
Yes.
Big pussy.
Is that okay, Tony? Did I sit?
Because, when you kill somebody, where they die on the show, you're not going to see them anymore.
It was a fate all the actors knew they could face.
The more they gave you to do, your character, the better shot at you getting killed off. I didn't buy an apartment here until the show was over.
Sciarrippa got a call one night from David Chase, who asked to come over.
He'd never been to your house before.
No! Does it come to your house? How they killed you then became a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Was it a good kill or did you fade away?
Yeah.
Mine was pretty good, the train story, it was pretty cool.
After 10 years of filming, The Sopranos' final episode aired in 2007.
Did I read that in the last read you actually started crying?
I was out of control. I was embarrassed. I really couldn't stop crying. It was ridiculous.
What were you feeling?
It was this thing in this moment will never happen again to me, to anyone.
It changed a lot of people's lives.
Sure. I think all of ours.
Yeah.
In all kinds of ways.
The ending, an abrupt cut to black, was controversial. Don't stop.
My initial thing was, did the TV go out like everybody? But the ambiguities of that, I thought, were really interesting. Did he die?
Yeah.
Is that the last thing he saw? Those questions that lingered that people just tried to figure out.
You kind of left room for everybody to make up their own ending.
Yeah. That was not my intention.
What was your intention?
Here, David Chase stopped to think.
I don't know how to explain it. Life is precious, and I don't think if we had done, if he'd gone to prison or if he'd died with his face in the linguine, I don't think we would have thought that.
I enjoy true crime podcasts as much as the next person, but I think we've all experienced losing sleep when an episode hits just a little too close to home. With ADT, get 24/7 peace of mind knowing that your home is protected by the most trusted name in home security. With nearly 150 years of experience, reliability, and safety innovations, ADT is a tried-and-true smart home security system that over 6 million Americans trust. Equipped with the latest technology and the intelligence of Google, ADT provides comprehensive protection that you can manage from virtually anywhere. Whether you opt for professional installation by ADT Pros or easily set it up yourself, customize your smart security system to work for your home and your routine. With Nest cams and doorbells, set up intelligent alerts so you receive notifications on what matters most. Your camera can tell the difference between a person, package, vehicle, and animal, and will alert you when there's activity. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, and Nest Doorbell are trademarks of Google LLC. ADT. Brilliantly safe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To Martha Teichner now, with a look at a father and son duo who managed to transform the flavor of their relationship from bitter to sweet.
Lastly, we have...
Honey.
Honey. Are you calling me honey?
Oh, yes.
All right.
The peacemaking power of food.
All right, let's rock and roll. It's shrimp time.
Take one, Mark.
It was fully on view as Kevin Pang... and his dad, Jeffrey, prepared to shoot an episode of their YouTube show. Hunger Pangs. Mm-hmm. Hunger Pangs.
Honey water stream is your mom's favorite. So that's why I come up with this recipe, is because I want to make your mom happy.
All these shrimp.
Working through their recipe for honey walnut shrimp at the studios of America's Test Kitchen in Boston, where the show was produced.
You want to toss it?
You'd never know that it's taken more than 30 years to get to this point.
If you were an immigrant kid, you're living in America, you do everything that you can to fit in, to try to be American, and part of that is rebelling against your childhood, against your culture.
And what happened to your relationship with your dad?
It deteriorated, and it's because I refused to speak Chinese at home.
Kevin Pang was six when the family emigrated from Hong Kong to Toronto, eventually moving to Seattle, where Jeffrey opened an export business.
My language is a big barrier for me. I don't know how to talk to my son because he very quickly entered into this Western world.
The slightest provocation, I think, would set things off. And look, you have two headstrong males, you know, it just makes for a pretty fiery situation.
Over time, contact between them became a perfunctory weekly phone call.
Just say hi and bye, no fighting.
That is, until Kevin became a food writer for the Chicago Tribune.
I had a reason now to call my pops and say, hey, what is red braised pork belly? Now we'd have these half-hour conversations.
And then, in 2012, to Kevin Pang's amazement, his food-loving dad took to YouTube. 2.2 million views and counting, with Chinese cooking demonstrations, punctuated with nods to a shared history Kevin had ignored. Everything he could never say in person flooded out in a New York Times article in 2016.
To bare my soul in front of my family, it's just this inconceivable, just horrific idea. But to do so, like, in a national newspaper, I have no problem with that.
Jeffrey Pang's response.
Hi, Kevin.
This is a good and true story. Thank you. Call me sometime. Dad.
Now.
We make fried chicken with shrimp paste. It is fantastic.
Father and son reminisce their way through Asian markets.
Here we go.
And of course, they cook.
Give it a smell, Martha.
Kevin finally gets that with each ingredient, each dish, they're retelling their story, preserving it.
So this is the book?
Yes.
For a year before they left Hong Kong in 1988.
And then some kind of dessert.
Catherine and Jeffrey Pang collected family recipes.
From his parents, my parents, and all the relatives.
Afraid they would lose their heritage.
I still can recall the moment they taught us how to cook a specific dish. It's our treasure.
Some of those recipes have found their way into the cookbook.
Ooh.
Jeffrey and Kevin Pang published together.
Yes.
This was the moment.
Yeah, what do you think?
They saw a finished copy.
So good.
Yeah?
For the first time last fall.
Today, my dreams come true.
Food is our common language. That's the language that we speak. That's what we can talk about. And who would have thought?
What are you having, old man?
Meatloaf.
You've been staring at that menu for 10 minutes. Where does it say meatloaf?
Well, they ought to have meatloaf.
Well, they don't, so pick something else.
That's June Squibb in Nebraska, a movie that turned her into an overnight sensation at the tender age of 84. Now she's making her debut as a leading lady and in conversation with our Mo Rocca.
When you are nominated for an Oscar, the lovely thing is you don't audition anymore. And that was kind of nice because I have been auditioning my entire life.
June Squibb had spent her life working primarily on the stage.
One more right here, please.
Before she got noticed and an Academy Award nomination for her role as the
See what you could have had, Keith, if you had
earthy matriarch in the 2013 movie Nebraska. At 84, her life had changed.
Since Nebraska, about 10 years ago, you've racked up something like 50 credits.
Yeah. I did not stop working.
Do you say no a lot?
I say no quite a bit. I really do.
So you're not afraid that this could be the last offer?
No, I don't. I'm sure I think that in my mind. Oh, God, what am I doing turning this down? But I just feel certain material is not for me.
But she couldn't say no to the title role in Thelma. At 94, June Squibb's first lead in a film ever.
Talk. Everybody wants to talk. My God, I just needed your scooter. Please be a doll and don't make a fuss. I read the script. It was a wonderful script, beautifully written. And I just felt, oh my God, I really want to do this.
In the movie, Squibb plays Thelma Post, who gets scammed out of $10,000 by a caller pretending to be her grandson.
Hello?
Grandma.
Danny? You sound so strange.
I'm in jail.
Oh my God.
Not the retiring type, Thelma sets out to get her money back with the help of a friend played by the late Richard Roundtree.
I'm going with or without you.
I'm not going to let you go alone.
And a scooter.
It was so much fun to know that Richard was sitting behind me on that scooter.
How much of this was about the scooter?
A lot. They had a stunt lady there for me. And I said, I want to try the scooter work. So they let me try it. Well, that was it. I was good at it.
So I said, well, why are you calling me? Why don't you call your mom and dad? He said, I don't want mom and dad to know.
The movie is based on a true story. Meet the real Thelma Post. A few years ago, a caller attempted to scam her.
So I said, okay, let me see what I can do. And then I thought about it. This doesn't sound like Josh. This sounds like a lot of crap and stuff.
Josh is Josh Margolin, the writer and first-time director of the movie. His grandmother, now 103, didn't fall for the scam. But Margolin was inspired.
To me, it just felt, it was a personal story about someone very important to me that I just felt I really needed to be the one to make.
What is Thelma trying to prove by going after these scammers?
I think she's trying to prove that she is still the Thelma that she has always been and prove to people she's still got it, while also needing to kind of navigate the realities of a new phase of life and the vulnerabilities that come with that.
And also, she wants to get the money back.
And she wants to get the money back.
The movie's funny, but it also takes Thelma's predicament seriously.
He was going on and on about how you hit someone. And
it was Were you consciously making sure that this didn't tip over into mockery of older people?
That was always on our minds, wanting to make sure we were kind of laughing along with Thelma, getting thrills and humor just from her quest and her character, but never wanting for it to feel like it was a mockery of any kind.
Margolin wrote the role of Thelma with June Squibb in mind. We were there when the actor met her subject.
I'm Thelma Post.
No, I'm Thelma Post.
Yeah, oh, that. My gosh.
I'm going to duke it out with you.
And June, we were earlier talking about the movie and Thelma's impression of the movie and of your performance as her. What do you think of June's performance as you?
What do I think of June's performance? I'm thrilled with it. I'm proud of it. I'm happy I'm being portrayed this way. I mean, how lucky can I be?
Keep it up, keep it up.
Why are we stopping at Mona's?
To get a gun.
With Thelma in theaters this week, Squibb has already said yes to her next gig.
We went to New Jersey for a one-day shoot on the new American Horror Story. She was a leprechaun that drank blood. And I felt, I've got to do this.
To be a leprechaun who drinks blood.
Right, okay. Right. I mean, how many chances do you get to do that?
Seven decades into her career, June Squibb is going for it like never before.
I think when you're young, you're so eager to please. You think, I want to make everybody happy. I want to make everybody like me. And as you get older, I think that that goes away, a lot of it. Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself eager to please?
No, I could care less. Why? At this age, what I've been through, who I've known, what I've dealt with, why should I care?
Ever wonder how you can stay sharp and focused in our never-ending news cycle? If you're having trouble keeping up with it all, there's something that can help. Symbiotica. They offer cutting-edge supplements that boost energy, focus, and overall health, ideal for anyone looking to enhance cognitive functions or improve gut health. They're formulated with high-quality plant-based ingredients. Symbiotica is transparent about how and where they source ingredients to ensure you get the best products possible. Their formulas don't have any seed oils, preservatives, toxins, or artificial additives. Plus, their supplements taste great. None of that chalky, sulfuric taste you get with other brands. Symbiotica genuinely cares about its customers, and you can really see the difference in how you feel and function. Unlock your full potential with Symbiotica today. Feel more energized, alert, and balanced with high-quality supplements. Head over to Symbiotica.com and use code CBS for 20% off plus free shipping on your subscription order.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach is wasting the time of both the buyer and seller at every stage, especially when sellers are using shallow and outdated data. Your organization can overcome these challenges with technology that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to better outcomes, like more pipeline, higher win rates, and larger deals. We call this deep sales, and we've built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/trial. That is linkedin.com/trial for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/trial and get started.
As the husband of Kamala Harris, the first woman to serve as vice president, Doug Emhoff is pioneering a new role. And as he tells Rita Braver, there's a lot more to being the first, second gentleman than you might imagine.
Yeah, let's do something, you know, businessy but hip.
Few VIPs would let anyone watch them in the very personal act of getting a haircut, even if it is to highlight small businesses during Hispanic Heritage Month.
Knowing that in your career you've not covered a haircut yet,
this was a historic
I feel very
first.
Honored.
But Doug Emhoff is used to venturing into uncharted territory as the husband of Kamala Harris, the first female vice president. He is the first male to be a vice presidential spouse. There wasn't even a name for it.
How did you come up with the title of Second Gentleman?
A bunch of us were talking about what to call me, since there's never been one of me
right.
before. It sounded about right. It was First Lady, Second Gentleman.
Emhoff, who is 59, gave up a successful Los Angeles law practice when his wife became vice president. He now teaches law part-time at Georgetown University.
Thanks for being out here today.
Oh, no, it's our honor to be here, sir.
He's content to keep a low profile, quietly attending a small ceremony on September 11th at the memorial in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Hi. Hello, Second Gentleman. It's wonderful to meet you, sir.
You too.
Before.
What's your name?
My name is Gavin Morris.
And having private conversations at the local firehouse with first responders.
And I said, well, someone needs to be here in Shanksville, and I wanted it to be me. And I really focused on them as people. I wanted to hear their stories.
Good
welcome
to, see
you. To the office of the Second Gentleman.
Thank you.
But when he's back in D.C.,
I'll ask you the question that all political wives get, and that is, are you also an advisor to your wife?
No.
No?
I am her husband. She has plenty of people around her giving her advice on her role. I'm just there to support her, to be there for her.
When she gets classified briefings, aren't you curious?
No. It's surreal sometimes when I know she's in the Situation Room and I'll see something on the news, I'm like, I wonder what's happening. And then when it's not classified, it could be, hey, you know, that might have been what was happening.
Doug and I bonded as spouses, you know, on the campaign trail.
First Lady Jill Biden, who of course was previously Second Lady, says Emhoff is a natural.
I think he likes people, he likes being with people, he connects with people, and I think that's really important.
Last month, she and Emhoff hit the campaign trail in Michigan together, where he talked about the Supreme Court's striking down abortion rights.
What they are doing on reproductive freedom and freedom in general is just outrageous.
Clearly following advice she gave him when he started.
I tried to say to him, Doug, don't waste your platform. Choose what you want to do and you know, make it yours.
How's it going?
Emhoff is not only the first Second Gentleman, he's also the first Jewish person ever to be in the Big Four, as the top two national couples are called. Emhoff and Harris proudly showed us a mezuzah, traditionally hung on doorposts of Jewish homes that they placed on the vice president's house. And Emhoff has taken a leading role in fighting anti-Semitism.
The work that Doug is doing is really extraordinary. I mean, fighting anti-Semitism, especially at this moment in time where so many people are living in fear and also just, you know, concerned about what's happening in our country.
She said this issue found me. And
did.
She literally said, and now you've got to step up.
That was all before the October 7th Hamas attacks on Israelis. Now Emhoff is front and center, standing in the Rose Garden with the president and vice president.
I know a lot of us are feeling alone, afraid, and in pain. There is an epidemic of hate, including a crisis of anti-Semitism in our country and around the world. I process that to this day as a Jewish person, the impact, the emotional, the rage, all those things that so many of us feel.
What about Palestinian and Muslim Americans who say we're hurting too?
All hate is bad. The work I've been doing
has centered not only on fighting anti-Semitism, but fighting hate of all kinds. Letting people know that a hate against one is a hate against all.
It is a far cry from his former life in California. You were born
in Brooklyn. Grew up in Jersey till I was 16. Moved here to LA when I was 16.
And what was it like to move here at 16?
So cool. It was in the early 80s. So it was almost like that Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
But Emhoff has always had his eye on his future.
Put myself through college right here in Northridge. And then I got into USC Law School. And I worked really hard, set a goal of being an entertainment lawyer, and I made it happen.
But as Emhoff acknowledged when we went for coffee at his favorite spot.
A black coffee for me.
I already got you. I saw you.
It wasn't Kamala Harris's prowess as Attorney General of California that attracted him when a mutual friend wanted to fix them up in 2013.
You didn't say, we'll have lots to talk about because of the law. You said something else.
What did you think I said?
She's hot. Is that true?
I think that's a true statement. And it was love at first sight. And we've been together ever since.
They married in 2014. And Harris became stepmom to Emhoff's children, Ella and Cole, from his first marriage, even presiding at Cole's wedding last year.
I do have to say, Doug is a lot better cook now that he's met Kamala.
We met up with Doug and Cole Emhoff at the original Farmers Market in Los Angeles.
I noticed that you call your father Doug. What's that all about?
I've done it my entire life, so it's just a habit at this point.
And you have Doug. A special name for the vice president, too?
Yes, Mamala. So together, they're Dougala. What can I say?
But as much as the vice president's family loves her, only a minority of Americans approve of the job that she and President Biden are doing.
What's your response when people are critical of your wife? Because, of course, they are.
I'm her husband. Nobody wants to see anyone they love criticized or attacked. But that said, I mean, she's vice president of the United States, so this all comes with the territory. She's the toughest person out there.
She's tough.
Oh, she's so tough. It just bounces right off of her.
And as for second gentleman Doug Emhoff, he is not California dreaming.
Do you ever think, well, you know, if things don't work out, we could always move back here and be just fine?
We're going to win this election. We have to win this election. Literally, our country and our world depends on us winning this election. That's what's going to happen.
If the steady drumbeat of news about violence and heartbreak in the Middle East is making you feel hopeless, you're not alone. But as Seth Doan discovered, a group of Israelis and Palestinians has come together, face to face, with one goal in common, peace.
He's an engineer with a master's degree, but this is Eli Avidor's life's work now.
Is this how you thought you'd be spending your retirement?
I'll tell you, I do something I love. I really think it's important.
The 73-year-old Israeli drives 3 hours from Tel Aviv every week to accompany Palestinian sheep herders in the West Bank. His real value to them, though, is not as a laborer.
You standing here in your jeans and t-shirt, you're a deterrent?
I'm a deterrent.
You have power simply because of your passport, being Israeli.
Sure.
He's trying to stop the intimidation from increasingly violent Israeli settlers.
You see the car there? They burnt it.
By documenting their aggression and calling authorities as the settlers plant this flag ever closer.
This is a war crime. We occupied this land. They tried to move the community out to the big villages so Israel can annex this area without the local people. I'm trying to stop it.
B'Tselem, an Israeli human rights group, reports incidents of extremist settlers tormenting Palestinians are on the rise.
He's there in order to drive all these people away.
Avidor, a war veteran, is fighting a different sort of battle today, and he feels just as patriotic wearing this uniform, a T-shirt for Combatants for Peace, which has a straightforward goal.
To spread the word that the other side is human, because you have to dehumanize in order to kill someone.
Formed 18 years ago, the group began bringing together former combatants, former enemies, emphasizing community building and the all too rare approaches of dialogue and understanding.
I learn about the Palestinians. I tell them my story, because what do they know? They meet violent settlers and they meet soldiers. That's the Israelis they know.
I grow up just imagining the Israelis or the Jewish as a one person who has holding a gun and just want to take everything that I have.
Tariq Sader joined from the Palestinian side with his uncle Ahmed Alhalou, who says his own fear and hatred of Israelis sparked desire for revenge.
I start to create it myself to be a strong fighter.
By the time he was 10, Alhalou says, he was burning tires and throwing rocks.
What do you say to foreigners who look at kids throwing rocks, being violent, and say, what a violent culture?
Listen, we are not violent people, but our life forced us to be like this.
As a teen, he joined Hamas.
Did you ever think about picking up weapons, arms?
Maybe in that time, yeah. Maybe if I got a chance to be a suicide bombing, maybe I will agree to, yes.
You would have been a suicide bomber?
Yeah.
But over time, he was exposed to different ways of thinking among other Palestinians.
Inshallah.
While the Oslo Peace Accords were being signed.
Our goal is to have a state, a Palestinian state.
Why do you think Combatants for Peace is the way toward that goal?
Because I believe in non-violence way, and I believe it is the only way.
Throwing a rocks or burning a tire will not do anything, will not fix. It's just a way just to show your anger.
How did your anger play out?
It's still like in a small cage inside me. Things that happening in Gaza, like it's will. All my bodies keep burning from inside.
They tell us they've lost 60 family members in Israel's assault on Gaza, which has killed more than 35,000 Palestinians. The UN figures about half are women and children.
How can you continue to want to have these conversations with Israelis?
I am sure that there is many Israelis. They against the war. They against the occupation. I'm working with them.
You realize that we are both humans. We have the same needs and feelings. So I said, if I go to fight them, they will fight me back. And if I fight them back, and they will fight me back, and I will fight them back, it will just be only violence. But if we talk to each other, they will hear me, and they will feel me, give me empathy.
That evening, Israelis joined Palestinians here in the West Bank to watch a ceremony recognizing the Nakba, the displacement of 700,000 Palestinians in 1948 during the creation of the Israeli state. Israeli Norit Badash came from Beersheba.
Why make a two-hour trip to come here?
It's like my second family. This is the only place to give me hope.
I'd imagine there are a number of Israelis who would say it's a pretty audacious thing for an Israeli to commemorate the Nakba.
We are an Israeli-Palestinian group. That's their story. This is our story. We share the stories.
He invited us to join him at a military cemetery in Tel Aviv on Israel's Memorial Day.
Every grave is a soldier.
Especially solemn this year in the wake of the October 7th massacre, when 1,200 people were murdered and 251 taken hostage.
One of the strongest connections to Israel is through Shuki and through the love of the country.
Shuki Vieter was his friend and commander, K-2
killed during the 1973 Yom Kippur War.
Every some years, we have new fallen, new conflict, new dead, the violence keep on. And that's why I'm trying to work with the other side to find a solution without violence.
A siren sounds each Memorial Day, and for 2 minutes, much of Israel halts to reflect on lives lost. Combatants for Peace stages its own commemoration on this day, recognizing the loss on both sides. Last year, 15,000 people attended. This year's event was smaller due to the war.
It's like medicine. These moments.
That's where we met Benny, who did not want us to share his last name. He was a soldier in the Israel Defense Forces who had a realization after barging into a Palestinian family's home during a raid.
They were not violent. They were just scared. We got out and I was sat behind this big rock and thinking, wow, now I've been the one who caused the trauma. I've been the one who caused the pain. We don't exist for each other.
That introspection was part of what pushed him to join this group. That and the realization he did not know much about this parallel world.
Growing up, I actually haven't heard the word Palestinians. I didn't know who they are.
You're an Israeli. You share the land.
We did heard a lot about Arabs are enemies. Syria, it's Lebanon, Palestinians. I had no idea there was millions of people there.
How much has October 7th changed the landscape?
A lot of new trauma came. Some people lost their faith.
Faith in?
In this work. They were so shocked and scared. They felt like, wow, all I did and for what? Just more pain came out.
But for some, it has strengthened resolve.
I cannot play on the beach, enjoying my life, when I know what is happening in the occupied areas under my name, my taxes. Even if the effect is minimal, I feel I have to do it. This is a purpose.
Eli Avidor found purpose out here among the Palestinian shepherds and maintains hope. Knowing through history, humankind has emerged from the darkest periods.
This is inhuman, to kill 40,000 people. How can we look at the mirror? But you know, there was World War II. We got over it. 100 years war between France and Germany. Apartheid in South Africa. There's hope and things can change.
He's found his own practical way of combating injustice with empathy.
I'm not doing it for the Palestinians. It has to be clear. My love is to my country, but I know that my country is in a trouble and in pain, and we have to get out of it.
And you see the way out is through dialogue with Palestinians.
That's exactly it. I really feel strong that I have to do it for my own sake, for my country, for my family, for my people.
This episode is brought to you in part by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcasts? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything, from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
I love Marge.
You love me. You're not marrying me.
Tom, I don't love you.
No, I don't mean that as a threat.
To be honest, I'm a little relieved you're going.
I think we've seen enough of each other for a while.
Actor Jude Law in The Talented Mr. Ripley, the movie that made him a star 25 years ago. Since then, the Englishman has racked up dozens of major credits. In his latest film, he plays one of the most infamous kings in history. He tells Lee Cowan all about it in our Sunday profile.
If you've ever wondered if a person can really remain anonymous in New York City, Jude Law just might be proof.
Do you get recognized a lot, or do you try to...
No. That depends.
It depends, because just which of his varied looks would you recognize? He's played playboys.
Everybody should have one talent. What's yours?
Witty writers.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital. Vital.
Fairy tale pirates.
Speak not to me of hands. Smee.
And storied sidekicks.
I've been reviewing my notes on our exploits over the last 7 months. Would you like to know my conclusion?
At 51, Jude Law rarely retraces the cobblestones of his past, and yet, on this day, bathed in the red of the Ethel Barrymore Theater in the heart of Broadway,
most extraordinary.
He couldn't help it.
All these memories come flooding back, sitting there, waiting to be revisited.
It was here back in 1995 when Law, just 23, made his Broadway debut.
I remember going to the theater manager, though, saying, like, do I pay my rent for the next month? And he was like, I don't know. I don't know, kid.
The play was Indiscretions.
But I should really...
No. You lead the way.
It earned 9 Tony nominations, including one for Law's performance.
Did you think when you started out that the stage seemed a more probable career than movies?
Absolutely. Film felt so distant, so abstract from my life in London, in Southeast London.
Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him.
Hamlet is almost a rite of passage for an English stage actor, and when Law played it, he got another Tony nod.
You said Hamlet was one of the hardest things you've ever done? One of the most challenging things?
Certainly. You're on stage for about 85, 90% of the play, I would say. You have these 8 enormous soliloquies. You know, being scared of taking on something like that is natural, and part of that should be the motivation for taking it on.
Playing royals seems part of his acting DNA.
Hail King Vortigern!
King Vortigern!
He's played fictional rulers, renowned rulers, and currently one of the most reviled, King Henry VIII, husband to 6 wives, 2 of whom he had executed.
They know what would happen.
We would have to have their head cut off. I have a theory that he was a romantic, really fell in love, and had no idea, of course, that his love life would go down this path of wreck and ruin and murder.
He's unrecognizable in Firebrand, the story of Henry's last wife, Catherine Parr.
Now death is on your soul.
James! James!
Take the horse.
I'm sorry.
What?
I'm so sorry. I don't know.
Any of the actions, whether they be aggressive, grotesque, lewd, they had to come from a reason, and they had to come, I think, from a sense of truth. It's always about that, really.
The vengeful King Henry VIII.
Part of finding that truth was getting at the humanity of just who Henry was. He was a man of war, yes.
You realize what we dragged these poor beasts into,
right?
But here are the Arms and Armor Gallery at New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. Curator Edward Hunter pointed Law to a suit of armor actually worn by the king himself. That shows evidence of the crippling pain in his legs, probably from a jousting accident.
Unlike many of the other armors around the galleries, it doesn't go all the way down.
No.
On his legs.
No.
He chose this armor specifically for comfort.
The open wounds were exactly around there, they think, weren't they?
Yeah.
On the lower legs.
Couldn't get on my horse. In front of all my men, it was humiliating.
That pain must have, you know, his temperament probably rose and fell. And I think that really colored who he was.
Growing up, the arts were everywhere. His parents were both teachers, but also performers. To them, Law's entrance into the arts wasn't a surprise, but his ensuing fame was.
What do they think of all your success? They've been around to see it all, which is great. Some people don't have that.
I guess, yes, indeed. I think it was a big thing for them to sort of understand. There's a certain public ownership that you suddenly feel you give up to this public persona.
Actor Jude Law testified at Britain's phone hacking trial on Monday.
In the mid-2000s, he lost all ownership of his private life. For years, his phone was being hacked by the tabloid News of the World, and every private conversation became public.
I mean, it seemed like who you were and the relationship you were in. I mean, there was really, at some point, it felt like there had to be nothing left to write about
Absolutely.
Your personal life.
I certainly felt like that. At the time, was like weathering a storm, and it dissipates and you learn from it and you adapt and your life moves on. What's been hard, I think, is in the UK, the media have rehashed stories that are 20, 25, some of them 30 years old. They'd been through every garment in my laundry basket and there was no more dirty
laundry. No more dirty laundry.
It was like, that's done.
Not surprisingly, these days, he and his current wife, Philippa Cohn, try to live a very private life.
We're on a great adventure together, and I feel hugely supported by her. Being a dad is a big part of that.
They have two young children, adding to the five Law had before. Having a famous dad is one thing. Having one voted as the sexiest man alive, well, that's another.
Come here. You're beautiful.
He was almost too good-looking, one might argue.
It sounds like even you at sometimes were wondering if roles were because of the way you looked or because of your performance.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because as soon as I engage in that sort of consideration, it's like I'm acknowledging that I have really good looks.
Right.
I've got to a point now where I look back at photos of myself, which I know I don't look like anymore, and I am able to say, oh no, I was really pretty. I was really, really pretty when I was in my 20s.
Amanda, are you by any chance at all into hot chocolate?
He could have made a living doing rom-coms, but he planned accordingly to do just the opposite.
I found my own path to try and really establish myself as an actor as opposed to a heartthrob. It felt like the long game.
He started seeking out roles portraying the unfortunate, the seemingly irredeemable.
I'm pathetic. I don't belong here. I'm a monster. I'm a dinosaur.
I'm something of a rarity. How's that?
I shoot the dead. Dead bodies.
Henry VIII is just the latest in a long line of the tortured and textured characters he so enjoys inhabiting. And while many think they may know Jude Law, the person, he still says most haven't got a clue.
I quite like there always to be an element of surprise, that people don't know me well enough to be able to say, oh, this is just like him. Or
you don't really want people to know the private side.
I'd rather they didn't. I think that's part of the fun of being an actor. There's a magic to it that you can't always dissect or understand until you're sort of in it doing it, and then you reflect and think, how did that come about?
Shop with Rakuten and you'll get it. What's it? It's the best deal, the highest cash back, the most savings on your shopping. So join Rakuten and start getting cash back at Macy's, Nike, Petco, and other stores you love. You can even stack sales on top of cash back. Just start your shopping with Rakuten to save money at over 3,500 stores. Join for free at Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you are allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
The internet has changed our lives in so many ways, but sometimes it seems all that content is here today, gone tomorrow. Enter the Wayback Machine. David Pogue takes us on a journey back in time.
David Samuel plays viola in a San Francisco string quartet, but he almost didn't make it into this country.
I'm a Canadian citizen and therefore needed a work visa if I was coming to the United States, an artist visa.
That visa required special documentation.
I was tasked with finding old programs, articles, interviews, anything that could demonstrate that I had contributed significantly to the field.
Unfortunately, most of that stuff had disappeared from the internet over the years.
And somebody said, oh, you should check out the Internet Archive, the Wayback Machine.
The Wayback Machine is a time machine for the web.
Mark Graham is the Wayback Machine's director.
It does that by going and looking at web pages, hundreds of millions of them every single day right now, and stores them in our servers.
The Wayback Machine has been making backup copies of the World Wide Web since 1996, coming up on 900 billion web pages backed up. It's free and public. Start at archive.org. Now you can see what the New York Times looked like in 1996, or what Netflix looked like when it was a DVD by mail company, or what your own website looked like whenever.
About a million people a day use the Wayback Machine.
Journalists, fact-checkers, politicians, policymakers, students.
I think it's a surprise to most people that web pages are as fleeting as they actually are.
Oh, it's kind of a cruel joke to call them a page. The average life of a web page is 100 days before it's changed or deleted.
Computer scientist Brewster Kahle created the Wayback Machine in 1996.
There it is!
As part of a nonprofit called the Internet Archive. Its San Francisco headquarters do look the part.
It's a beautiful building.
But I mean, it screams your mission, you know, this is a temple of knowledge.
Absolutely.
Inside, you'll find the original pews, slightly creepy statues of everyone who's ever worked for the Internet Archive, and banks and banks and banks of computers.
So is it like, that's a hard drive, that's a hard drive, that's a hard drive, that's a hard drive?
Exactly right. This is about 1/20th of the servers that are one copy of the Internet Archive, and then there are multiple copies to keep it safe.
But Brewster Kahle wants to back up more than just the web. He wants to back up everything.
Can we get all of the published works of humankind available to anybody curious enough to have access to it?
He's backing up old music and old video games.
Oregon Trail, Prince of Persia, an early Pac-Man.
And TV shows.
Green Acres. We have maybe the world's biggest VCR. Eliza, we've got some new books.
And books. And everything Kahle backs up, he makes free online. Even the obscure stuff, like vintage game shows, knitting magazines, and pet rock manuals. You can even check out the books he's scanned as though from a library. And that's where the trouble begins.
The publishers decided to sue the Internet Archive over lending books. The music publishers, they're suing for $400 million.
If they win these cases, could that end the Internet Archive?
Yes.
The Association of American Publishers declined an interview, but wrote to us, there is simply no legal justification for copying millions of copyrighted books, changing them into ebooks, and distributing them to the public, all without getting permission.
We'll see how it all turns out. It's being fought out in the courts.
The publishers won their lawsuit against Kahle's operation. He's filed an appeal. The record company's lawsuit is pending. In happier news, violist David Samuel did wind up finding every concert program, interview, and article he needed for his visa on the Wayback Machine.
And even some stuff that I had forgotten about. And I received my green card just a few months ago in September.
Wow. Well, welcome to America.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
If you like this podcast, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a quick survey at wondery.com/survey.
Have you ever heard of the term nuclear family? The term was coined by an anthropologist in the 1920s to describe the family structure of a straight married couple and their kids. Well, now, over a century later, that definition of family describes only 18% of American households. From This Is Actually Happening comes The 82%, Modern Stories of Love and Family, a six-part series focused on those who have challenged some of our deepest societal norms by reimagining what love and family can be. From an asexual educator and activist raising a child with two other co-parents, to a gay man in the clergy who chose the path of celibacy and created a unique family unit with his straight best friend. Each episode offers an intimate first-person perspective from those whose family lives have taken different shapes. To listen to the 82% series, follow This Is Actually Happening on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to This Is Actually Happening ad-free on Wondery Plus.
Scammers are best known for living the high life until they're forced to trade it all in for handcuffs and an orange jumpsuit once they're finally caught. I'm Saatchi Cole.
And I'm Sarah Hagee. And we're the host of Scamfluencers, a weekly podcast from Wondery that takes you along the twists and turns of some of the most infamous scams of all time, the impact on victims, and what's left once the facade falls away.
We've covered stories like a Shark Tank certified entrepreneur who left the show with an investment, but soon faced mounting bills, an active lawsuit filed by Larry King, and no real product to push. He then began to prey on vulnerable women instead, selling the idea of a future together while stealing from them behind their backs.
To the infamous scams of Real Housewives stars like Teresa Giudice, what should have proven to be a major downfall only seemed to solidify her place in the Real Housewives Hall of Fame.
Follow Scamfluencers on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Scamfluencers early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Paramount Podcasts.